You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat on this Wednesday, it's the second consecutive off day for the Rockets. They're coming off a win Monday over the San Antonio Spurs that pushes them to 53-14 on the year, two games up, plus the tiebreaker on the Golden State Warriors in the race for the number one seed and home court advantage throughout the playoffs. Most likely, the Warriors are the closest threat to the Rockets, but don't want to forget about the Raptors, who are three games back, but do hold a tiebreaker on Houston. So effectively, you want to make sure that you are not outplayed by three games by either the Warriors or the Raptors over the final 15. That begins tomorrow night at Toyota Center. The Rockets play the Clippers. Rockets, they had an off day yesterday, Tuesday, entirely because of all the high volume of games, 5 and 7 nights. They needed a game a day, I should say, for everyone to recharge. They're back at it today at Toyota Center. About the only curious thing, the guys who are injured, Ryan Anderson, Brandon Wright, they're still out. The guys who are healthy are still ready to go. They did technically add Chris Paul to the injury report with left knee soreness. However, Chris says he's fine. He actually expressed surprise that he was on the injury report in the first place, which tells me that it's less about the injury, more about they may be considering resting him, especially with a tough three-game and four-night stretch coming up starting Saturday at New Orleans, at Minnesota, at Portland, three games on the road, all against playoff teams. So the Rockets may see a home game against the Clippers, similar to the way they saw the road game in Dallas on Sunday, a game that without James in the case of Dallas, without Chris in the case of the Clippers, they should still be able to win anyway, but rest their star players so that they're more able to go 100% in the games that they really need it, such as the Spurs. Now, granted, when the Rockets launched the plan to rest Harden in Dallas, I don't know if they knew that LaMarcus Aldridge would be sitting out for the Spurs, but you can never take the Spurs too seriously. They deserve that respect with Greg Popovich, and then this upcoming road trip, New Orleans, Minnesota, Portland, it speaks for itself. Three quality Western Conference playoff teams. So if the Rockets do sit Chris tomorrow, I think it's with the bigger picture in mind, but according to Chris, he's planning on playing, so we'll just have to wait and see. Either way, I think you can exhale. It certainly does not appear that there's any sort of real injury there. It's just one of the classic maintenance cases that top NBA teams deal with over the final month of the year, which we are now in before the playoffs. That's in contrast, of course, to what the Warriors are dealing with Stephen Curry. The news of the day in NBA circles yesterday is that Curry, after missing the last two Golden State games, both losses at Portland, at Minnesota, it doesn't seem like he's going to be returning anytime soon. He's actually not going to be even reevaluated until next Tuesday, the 20th. That means he'll miss tonight's game against the Lakers. He'll miss the matchup with the Spurs next week. And say what you will about the Spurs and how poor they looked on Monday against the Rockets. They got LaMarcus Aldridge back on Tuesday, and they looked very daunting against the Orlando Magic in that one. So lots of games that the Warriors conceivably could lose without Curry, even with the schedule easing up a little bit without Stephen Curry. You heard it from Kevin Durant over the weekend. He is their system. It's a big loss. And unlike the Rockets, who are sitting guys mostly out of rest, if they do, this is a real injury because when you don't have a confirmed timetable, when you see, well, he'll be reevaluated at a certain date, that's because they want to see how the injury responds. It's not rest. It's a legitimate issue that the Warriors are having to deal with. And I want to lead with that because in today's show, second consecutive off day, there's not a ton of new news around the Rockets. We're just waiting for the next game on Thursday night against the Clippers to start this final stretch of the season. So with this being an off day, this show is going to be about essentially a standings update, where we are first and foremost with the one seed, the race with the Warriors, but also potential round two and even round one opponents, what I think the likely scenarios are and what, in my opinion, Rockets fans should be cheering for as you go down the home stretch of the year. And in segment one, we're going to start with the race for the number one seed and Rockets versus Warriors, because that's been the theme this entire year. I know that's what most everyone, fans, and especially the organization, are focused on. And the good news, the Rockets are in great position to get it. With a two-game lead plus the tiebreaker with only 15 games left, the Rockets would have to be outplayed by 3 games over the final 15. To put it in perspective, if the Rockets finish 12-3, that's an 80% winning clip, roughly on par with what they've done this entire year, then the Warriors have to finish 15-0 to take the number one spot. And that's still with no projected timetable for the return of Stephen Curry. So, and of course, Curry's injury being to his ankles, and all you have to do, Google Steph Curry ankles, it's a chronic situation for him. And now with him being 30 years old, his much celebrated 30th birthday this week, it's fair to wonder what his future is. And you can see why the Warriors are going to be ultra conservative with an ankle that's been sprained 4 times this year already that we know of. So it's a very serious situation for the Warriors, and it makes it all the less likely that they're going to be able to close the gap on the Rockets by 3 games in the final 15. However, as with anything these days, and the hot take culture of certainly Twitter, but also some of the national NBA TV shows, you're seeing some analysts take it too far. You're seeing some say, well, the Warriors don't even care about the one seed. They're going to give it to the Rockets because the Warriors can win anywhere. The Warriors are not giving this to the Rockets. They came out of the All-Star break only a half game down in the standings. The Warriors won their first 7 games out of the All-Star break. You heard Steph Curry and Klay Thompson talking about the potential to win out. Sunday in Minnesota, their latest loss. We've discussed a lot lately how the Rockets have managed minutes so well. The Warriors threw out Kevin Durant for 39 minutes, Klay Thompson for 40. Draymond Green with a sore shoulder for 35. They wanted that game. They just lost. The Warriors are not going out there resting players. The only guy that hasn't played has been Stephen Curry. The only guy in terms of their top 4 or 5 has been Steph Curry, and that's a very legitimate injury, as we discussed. Otherwise, you're seeing Durant, Klay Thompson, guys play nearly 40 minutes a night. That's what we saw in the past from the Rockets in prior seasons when they had to kind of overextend their guys in the regular season. And if anything, it's the Warriors that are coming closer to overextending guys in March rather than the Rockets. You look at the Rockets, the minutes for guys like James Harden, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, they've been fairly controlled. It's the Warriors that are trying to play so hard. It's just without Steph Curry, there's not enough there, especially on the road against playoff teams like Portland and Minnesota, to get those wins. So no, the Warriors are not punting on the one seed. Now, maybe that the math is so staggering now with essentially them having to outplay the Rockets by 3 games over the final 15. Maybe that changes the calculus. But to this point, it has not been the Warriors punting on the one seed. It's been the Rockets taking it, and the Warriors, especially in the context of the Curry injury, just not having quite enough to keep up. And we live in a culture, in my opinion, where lots of people, when they make their initial opinions, they just can't stand to be wrong. So we've had these takes all year that the Warriors are the better team. And up until last week, we heard these narratives that the Rockets have won 17 games in a row, haven't lost since the All-Star break, yet they're only a half game up. Well, now that the lead has expanded, you're seeing the goalposts move. And a lot of this, it's just that a lot of these analysts, they don't want to admit that they're wrong. So if it turns out that their prediction is wrong, then it's not that they misjudge the teams. Now suddenly you're seeing these excuses that, oh, it's because the Warriors just don't want it. No, the Rockets are probably better than a lot of folks thought they were, so give them credit. Maybe the Warriors aren't quite as good. And also the Curry injury, it is foreseeable. That's why last week I said I thought 64, 65 wins would probably get it done for the Rockets and the one seed, because the Warriors aren't going to be able to be that much of a juggernaut down the stretch of the year with now a 30-year-old lead guard with a chronic ankle situation that he sprained 4 times. None of this should have been particularly hard to see, but you have a lot of analysts out there, in my opinion, who all year long have built up the Warriors as insurmountable for the Rockets, and now you're trying to see some sort of justification, some rationalization, so now you're seeing the goalposts move and say, well, the Warriors are giving it to the Rockets. No, they're not. The Warriors, they want the one seed. It's just the Rockets are outplaying them. They are have been the better team over 82 games, or at least through the first 67, and it looks like it's going to end that way, barring any sort of catastrophic collapse, knock on wood. Now, with that said, I do agree with the general idea that the one seed is more important to the Rockets than it is to the Warriors. The Warriors are the type of team, having won the Western Conference 3 consecutive years, they could be down 3-0 in a playoff series, and they'll believe that that they're going to come back and win the next four. The Rockets, as the challenger, belief is harder for them. I'm not saying they're not a confident team, but it goes to another level when you have had the success the Warriors have had over the past 3 years. So for the Rockets, when you're the challenger, when you're trying to make that leap, then every advantage you can get, game one, game two, game five, game seven, it's a big deal to having the Rockets having the same sort of mental toughness and belief that the Warriors do. So yes, on some level, I will accept the idea that it's more important to the Rockets than the Warriors to get the number one seed. However, the Warriors are very aware of that, and thus, that's why they want the number one seed to get every advantage they can so that Houston will fold much more quickly than if, for example, the Rockets are able to get one or both of those first two games in Houston and extend this into a long series. If there's anything you should know about the Warriors, it's that they have killer instinct. And so, yes, the number one seed, in my opinion, is important for Houston's confidence as the challenger. And the Warriors know that, which is exactly why they want the number one seed to kind of snuff it out before Houston can even get in that series and push it deeper into, you know, a game five, a game six, a game seven, whatever it ends up being. So because it is such a big deal to Houston, it's also a big deal to the Warriors, and they have the killer instinct to realize that, to prove in the regular season before you even get to the playoffs that, hey, this is our league, this is our conference, this is the same as prior years. We are the 500-pound gorilla. So even if the Warriors may not need the number one seed, at the same time, they know that Houston probably does, and so that's why you're seeing guys like Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson play 40 minutes a night, Draymond 35-plus. They want it. It's just they're not quite as good as the Rockets right now. And as far as why it's a big deal to the Rockets, I mentioned confidence. When you look at a best-of-seven series, a lot of folks, in my opinion, misunderstand the role of home court advantage. Because in theory, you can say, well, the team that's not going to have home court is going to win a game on the road anyway. And so what you often see is a team that, if a road team takes game one or game two, you say, well, all that work that was done over the regular season, it's gone. Home court is already lost. And that's not the way it works, because the odds are both teams are going to win at least one road game, especially when you're dealing with teams that good. The home court advantage is not going to go away if the Warriors take a game one or a game two in Houston. The reason it's such a big deal for the Rockets, it's not just those first two games, although it does give you a better opportunity to get into the series without being overwhelmed. It's also having game five and game seven in your back pocket. Let me give you a few examples. First, as far as starting well, when you're the challenger, you want to believe that you can compete with these guys. They are the three-time defending Western Conference champions. If you start at home for game one and game two, it'd be nice if you got both of them, of course. But even if you get one, you make it clear that this is going to be certainly at least a five-game series and probably longer than that. It's a big deal. You go back to the 2015 Western Conference Finals when the Rockets and Warriors played. Now, yes, the 2018 Rockets are way better than the 2015 Rockets. I get it. Back then, other than James Harden, your backcourt rotation was Jason Terry, Paolo Prigioni, the geriatric duo, and Corey Brewer. Now you have Chris Paul and Eric Gordon. Hat tip to Daryl Morey. Look how far the Rockets have come. But in that series, that Western Conference Finals, the first two games in Golden State, the Rockets actually played very well, especially James Harden. For all the playoff grief he gets, it's amazing how people overlook that series. Harden, the first two games in Oakland, was out of this world, virtually averaging a 35-point triple-double on over 50% shooting from the field. He was just absurd. And both games were right down to the wire, but being in Oakland, the Warriors were able to narrowly escape in both of those. And then what happened when the series shifted back to Houston, you finally had a game where the Rockets made shots at a lower clip. Essentially, they just had a bad night, but because they were in that 0-2 hole, then all of a sudden that bad night comes in game three, and you're looking right down the barrel of an insurmountable 3-0 deficit. So that's why getting the first two games at home are such a big deal, because the odds are if you play well at home, you're going to be able to win at least one of those games, and then you're in the series. Whereas if both games are in Oakland, you can play well in both of those, which is what the Rockets did in 2015, and still lose. And at that point, you're sort of behind the eight ball because, wow, if you have any sort of a letdown in game three at home, well, you're pretty much done. Another scenario I want to look at. Think about the Rockets-Spurs last year. The Spurs were six games better than the Rockets over the regular season. They had home court in that second-round series we all discuss. And the Rockets went in there game one and won by almost 30. They dominated. And everyone said, well, the Rockets have taken home court. Technically, they did. But the Spurs, having home court advantage, ended up playing an enormous role in that series. The swing game five, when it was tied at two, went right down to the wire. You better believe that playing in San Antonio had a lot to do with the defensive energy the Spurs put out there, any 50-50 calls going their way. You guys know what a playoff crowd does, especially in intimate settings like NBA arenas. And then what happened with the Rockets in Game 6, the fatigue, the lack of effort, whatever you want to call it, I believe the biggest factor of all was that the Rockets simply did not believe that they could win a Game 7 in San Antonio. So it took a toll on their effort going into Game 6 because it's sort of like, well, even if we win this game, I don't know that there was the belief that they were actually going to be able to win a Game 7 at San Antonio. So having those games in your back pocket, it played a big role in that series last year. I would also say it gives you so much insulation because you look at, for example, the 2015 comeback, the Rockets-Clippers, when the Rockets came from 3-1 down, or even the 2016 comeback in the Western Conference Finals when the Warriors came back from a 3-1 deficit against the Thunder. Even a 3-1 deficit is not that daunting if you have home court advantage, because it's a matter of, okay, you win game five at home, that's in your gym, and the other team may not take it quite as seriously. And then at that point, all you have to do is win one game on the road, game six, one game. And from there, you have a home game seven. So even a 3-1 deficit is not that daunting if you have the home court advantage in your back pocket. I know how it gets played up, especially in this era of Twitter, hashtag Warriors blew a 3-1 lead, yada, yada. I know that stuff is out there, but if you have, well, I guess you could also point out when the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead, they actually blew a 3-1 lead with game five and game seven at home, which makes that example all the more amazing that they blew that against the Cavs in the 2016 finals. But if you are looking, for example, like the Warriors when they're down 3-1 in the 2016 Western Conference Finals, or the Rockets down 3-1 against the Clippers in the 2015 semis, if you have home court advantage, even a 3-1, it's not that difficult because all you have to do is win one game on the road to get back on serve, and then especially a game seven, a game five, but especially game seven, that's where the home court advantage really becomes significant. So in general, the reason the number one is so important to the Rockets, it just gives you so much more breathing room. Yes, you want to start the series well. You want to have four out of seven in Houston rather than in Oakland. All that's a big deal. But in addition to those factors, it just gives you so much more breathing room throughout a series. And for a team that's the challenger, having that extra breathing room is a big deal. So that's why the Rockets are prioritizing the number one as much as they are. You want every advantage you can get going up against Golden State. You want to be as engaged as you possibly can be. You want to mentally believe on every possible level. It absolutely boosts your odds there. And the good news with the Rockets, as we said, 53-14, the Warriors 51-16, still no projected return date for Stephen Curry. Even with a slightly tough week upcoming for the Rockets, we mentioned the three-game road trip, the schedule eases up after that, and it's tough to imagine the Warriors outplaying the Rockets by three games over the final 15. Not impossible, but tough to imagine, especially with the current status of Steph Curry. So you can't assume anything, but it's looking very good for the Rockets, and if the Rockets get that number one seed, you should be pretty excited about it because it is a very big deal. Now, transitioning from our initial discussion of the Warriors, the race for the one seed, also want to discuss the other things at play for the Rockets entering these final few weeks, essentially a month to go until the playoffs. The main storyline is the Warriors because the race for number one, that's been there all year long. But beyond that, you do have to get to the Western Conference Finals for that to matter. And the Rockets will be heavy favorites in round one and round two, but much crazier things have happened. Go back to just 10 years ago when the 67-win Dallas Mavs, a juggernaut, lost to the 8th-seeded Warriors in round one. Crazier things have happened, so you can't take anything for granted. We've discussed a lot round one. I will talk about them in the third and final segment coming up. But if you want more analysis of the round one contenders, I did a show in mid-February during the All-Star break, and I think a lot of that analysis still holds. For this segment, I actually want to talk about round two, because we discuss a lot the first series, and then, of course, the inevitable Rockets-Warriors, or seemingly inevitable, showdown. What we haven't discussed as much is that series in between. And in my opinion, in recent days, I've had a shift in opinion about who it's best for the Rockets to play. This is the second round. If the Rockets are the one seed, they would play the winner of the 4 versus 5. If they're the 2, or Golden State's the 2, whoever the 2 is, would play the winner of the 3 versus 6. And all season long, I've been on the side of avoid playing the Oklahoma City Thunder in round 2 because of the enormous star power that's there, the defense led by Steven Adams. They just have a gear that we have seen from time to time in certain games, although we haven't seen it lately, and that's a part of why my opinion is changing. But Russell Westbrook, Paul George, the star power speaks for itself. And all year long, I've said, let the Warriors go through that headache in round 2 rather than the Rockets. I'm changing my opinion. The team that I want to avoid most in round 2, and the good news is that by the standings right now, the Rockets are in position to do that, is the Portland Trailblazers. Winners of 10 in a row, now the number 3 seed. By the way, they've also beaten the Warriors twice since the start of February, one of those with Stephen Curry. I respect the Blazers a lot. They've won 10 games in a row. They're starting to get some real separation. Spots 3 through 10 in the West have been close all year. Finally, the Blazers are starting to build out that lead on this 10-game winning streak. They've long been known as a great offensive team. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, two guys that can fill it up on a given night, just as Russell Westbrook and Paul George can go crazy on any given night, so can Lillard and McCollum. But what makes the Blazers special, they're a top 10, actually approaching top 5 in defensive efficiency. So many long athletes. You look on the perimeter, the guys they start, Al-Farouq Aminu, who going back to his days with Dallas and New Orleans has given the Rockets fits. Mo Harkless, Evan Turner, Ed Davis, so many long athletes. Yusuf Nurkic in the middle, who had a brilliant game the other night against the Miami Heat on national TV. There's a lot of rebounding, there's a lot of length, and so you combine that much versatility on the defensive end of the floor with the upside of an offense led by Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, two guys who, in addition to being great playmakers and scorers throughout the game, seem to have that clutch gene late in close games that allows them to execute and elevate their level of play even more. They're a scary opponent. Do I think they could beat the Rockets or Warriors 4 times out of 7? No. But do I think they could make you work? Yes. And I would rather Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, especially Steph Curry on a gimpy ankle, have to chase around Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum for 6 or 7 games before facing Chris Paul and James Harden. Imagine how good that would feel, as opposed to, say, James Harden and Chris Paul having to chase around those Portland guards for 4 or 5 games, or 5 or 6 games, at least, I should say. We don't want to be too optimistic about it, before facing Steph Curry and Klay Thompson in the finals. So I think that's the kind of series that can tax you. I don't know that Portland could win it, but when you combine their defense with their playmaking, they're a scary team, and they seem to be rounding into form at just the right time. Also, that Portland home court, I would say it's clearly one of the top 5 most intimidating in the NBA. Great fan base, tough to win at. It's taken a lot to get me to say there's someone other in Oklahoma City that I fear more in the Western Conference, but I'm willing to say it for Portland now. What they are doing is impressive, and kudos to them. A lot of us in the offseason, myself included, when Portland tried to get in the mix for Carmelo, said, what does Portland think they're doing, acting like they're a contender? Well, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and the depth of players they already had, they're elevating their play in a way that they were not doing a year ago. Sometimes internal growth can happen. The Blazers have taken a step forward, and we've seen it. Yes, they've had a little bit of an easier stretch, but again, in the past month, they've beaten the Warriors twice, including the Warriors with Stephen Curry, and the last meeting as part of this 10-game win streak wasn't even close. They won by 17. So kudos to Portland. They look legitimate. So in my eyes, the greatest prize is to avoid the Portland Trailblazers in round 2. And if the standings stay as they are, the Blazers are creating separation for that 3 spot and Warriors-Blazers round 2. Yeah, let Steph Curry and Klay Thompson go through the headache of chasing Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Not that Oklahoma City, who I believe now is either in the 4 or 5 spot, it's still so jumbled between 4 and 10. The reason I don't fear Oklahoma City as much, I think the loss of Andre Robertson hurt them a lot. Because we saw this last week when the Rockets played the Thunder. We also saw a week before that when the Thunder played the Warriors. Neither of those games were even competitive. And the biggest reason is that when the Rockets and Warriors got clicking offensively, there was very little that the Thunder could do. There are a couple of dynamite individual defenders in there. Still Paul George, Steven Adams, although Steven Adams has a gimpy ankle now. Those guys are individually very good. But between the lack of Robertson, now you're trying to fit in a 30-something-year-old Corey Brewer. We all know Russell Westbrook's liabilities. And, of course, Carmelo Anthony, who is simply dreadful. When you have teams like the Rockets and Warriors, you can get enough switches, you can execute enough picks to where somewhere along the way, Carmelo Anthony is going to get switched on to James Harden or Russell Westbrook. We saw that happen a lot last week, and there's just a matchup that you will be able to exploit. The Rockets, the Warriors, these teams have too many playmakers, and without Andre Robertson, the Thunder just do not have enough depth defensively of options that they can turn to. Yes, you have a couple of dynamic individual guys in Paul George and Steven Adams, but up and down the roster, there's just not nearly enough versatility to eliminate the possibility of James Harden, Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, whoever it may be, from eventually finding a one-on-one matchup that they can just exploit. And that's what ultimately happened last week when the Rockets got separation from the Thunder. It was because Carmelo got switched on to Harden time after time, and Harden just blew by him, going right to the rack. And I'm not going to say that I want to play the Thunder, but relative to Portland, I just think they're a team that is easier to exploit, especially when the Rockets are on offense. Portland has enough depth and talent of long athletes to cause you a lot of problems. It's not as easy to get favorable matchups for James Harden and Chris Paul. And at some point over the course of an NBA season, you are what you are. I'm not saying the Thunder are equivalent to the 41 and 41 Rockets from a couple of years ago. They're better than that. They're better than a 500 team. But I remember that season, the reason I'm thinking of that example, so much throughout the year we said, okay, the Rockets are going to figure it out. When they get it right, look out. And they never did. Look, we're over 80% of the way through an NBA season at this point. The Thunder, we've said all year, well, when they get clicking, when they flip the switch, well, I think at this point, you kind of are what you are. If you haven't had a prolonged run of success by this point in the NBA season, it's tough to imagine you just flipping the switch in the playoffs. Now, that's not saying the Thunder are a bad team. They're going to be a playoff team. They've had a few quality wins this year against the likes of the Warriors and the Rockets. Good for them. On rare occasions, they can step up. They have the individual difference makers to still take a game here or there. But as far as taking 4 out of 7, that takes consistency. And I think the same lack of consistency that's prevented them from getting any traction all year long would hurt them in the playoffs. And now it's compounded by personnel issues because since losing Andre Robertson, in my opinion, there's just not nearly enough depth on the defensive end of the floor for them to match up with the Western Conference top teams. So Oklahoma City, not saying they're easy to beat, still a team that in my ideal world, I actually think you'd have Oklahoma City as the 6, Portland as a 3. So either way, Golden State's playing one of them and Houston is playing neither as the 1. But if I had to choose between playing Portland or Oklahoma City, at this point, I would play Oklahoma City. And that goes against what I've said all year long. But sometimes you have to keep an open mind. You can be wrong. Keep your eyes open. Trust what your eyes tell you. And despite me expecting Oklahoma City to be a better team, at this point, Portland is. And the sample size is enough. We are deep enough into the season where I'm trusting my eyes. I'm not going with what I expected on paper. I am trusting what I am seeing on the court, which is that Portland, outside of the big two, is playing by far the best ball in the Western Conference. And I think there's a reason for that. And because of that, they're the team that I would least like to play in round 2. Now, to close out the podcast, I want to discuss round 1 very briefly because I've discussed the possibilities in the past. You can go back to our podcast in mid-February during the All-Star break, in which I ranked the theoretical possibilities really 1 through 5. I didn't include San Antonio, Minnesota, and Oklahoma City. I did include Portland. Portland, I said, was the team I would least like to play. Well, since then, Portland has turned it on to a point where they're no longer even really in the consideration for being a 7 or 8 seed. So the good news is that the team I wanted to play least, they're out the window. Other than that, I believe I ranked it Clippers, Denver, New Orleans, Utah in terms of teams I would play. Now, at this time, I am going to throw San Antonio and Minnesota in the mix because San Antonio with the continued injury issues with Kawhi, still no return date for him. We expected earlier in the week that maybe Thursday could be his return. Turns out, nope, he's still not ready. And Minnesota with the ongoing injury situation with Jimmy Butler, theoretically, they could be in the mix for the 8th slot too. I'm going to put them at the back of the line as far as teams I would least like to play because San Antonio, Minnesota, I'm not overly concerned about the return of Kawhi Leonard or Jimmy Butler. As I explained on Monday's show, the final segment, I think far too much is being made out of the Kawhi return factor, because if he does return, the odds are the Spurs are going to dig themselves out to where they're not an 8 seed. There's so little separation, 4 through 10. But more likely, you're not going to see MVP version of Kawhi Leonard until at least next season. We're talking about a chronic injury, and especially if he's not returning now, you're probably just not going to have enough time to where he can actually integrate and get back to a 30-plus minutes per game level to the MVP version we saw last year. Even so, the Spurs and Timberwolves, for most of the year, up until the All-Star break, had consistently been the 3-4, and there's a reason for that, because by and large, for the balance of the season, they have been more consistently competitive teams than the Denver, Utah, New Orleans, who am I forgetting, Clippers tier. So that's why those two teams, I would want to play them least. I wouldn't say I fear them, but I would just put them at the end of the line because they have shown a higher gear than those other teams have in terms of when things are clicking. And there are reasons to believe there's veterans in each of those cases. And, you know, if you get Jimmy Butler back, you get Kawhi Leonard, there is that chance that one of those high-end talents, even if they've been injured, can kick it into another gear once you get into the playoffs. So I would say, while none of the teams are scary, I'll put them at the back of the list. As far as the other four, I keep the Clippers at the front. I just don't think there's really the high-end talent to compete with the Rockets. Denver, I would put them at 2 for the same reason. Denver with Jokic, there is a higher degree of top-end talent, but it just does not seem to match up with the Rockets well at all. The only switch I would make, I think at this point, I would rather play Utah than I would New Orleans. New Orleans, they have lost a couple of games in a row coming off a 10-game winning streak, but even without Boogie Cousins, they've been surprisingly good. Anthony Davis, his numbers in February were just off the charts ridiculous, averaging like 35 points a game, 10 rebounds, something ridiculous, and winning player of the month. He's the kind of individual talent that can take over a series that I don't think Utah has. I think maybe I underestimated Utah. Underestimated New Orleans after losing Boogie Cousins. They recovered nicely getting Nikola Mirotic, and then you have Anthony Davis playing some of the best ball of his career. They might be, again, neither of these teams are teams the Rockets should be threatened by at all. Utah, I initially had them towards the back end because of their style of play. On paper, you see a team like Utah that plays such a defensive style, slower in the half court, but at this point, I'm more comfortable with the Rockets playing that style than I was a month ago, because we've discussed a lot over the past 6 weeks, partially because of the injuries. The Rockets have been at the slowest pace in the NBA, and so they have shown that they can compete even if the game is slowed in a half-court setting. And I can't get past that win in Utah a couple of weeks ago on night 2 of a road back-to-back at altitude at Denver and then at Utah. And in that one, Utah was a rested team, but ultimately, even though they were rested, the Rockets were dead tired, it didn't matter because the Rockets actually won the game on the defensive end of the floor, limiting the Jazz to just in the mid-80s in points. So even if on paper they play a style that you say, well, that's kind of the opposite of D'Antoni ball, the reality is that the Rockets, they're comfortable playing and executing the half court as well. And then you look on the other side, the top Jazz playmakers, Donovan Mitchell, it's probably a lot to ask a rookie to take over a playoff series, especially against a team like the Rockets. And maybe before the trade deadline, if they had Rodney Hood, you could see a scenario where Rodney Hood gets hot in a game or two. Right now, other than Donovan Mitchell, there's not really that much in terms of consistent perimeter creation. Ricky Rubio, Joe Ingles, there are quality players up and down the roster, but no one that you can really trust to go break down a defense when it's set. So at this point, I just, the Jazz, they play a style that's not always fun to play, but at the same time, I just don't see the offense that can really threaten the Rockets. So that's why even if the style on paper is kind of a contrast, a foil to the typical Mike D'Antoni ball, well, A, this is not a typical Mike D'Antoni team, as evidenced by the slower pace that the Rockets have employed and thrived while using over the past month, and B, there's just such limited playmaking potential that, to me, again, the Rockets should be heavy favorites in all of these series regardless, but I would rather play a Utah team in which I just don't know where their consistent playmaking and shot creation is going to come from, as opposed to a New Orleans team that has Anthony Davis. That's the only switch I would make. I still have the Clippers and Denver at the front of the list. I think those are very favorable matchups for the Rockets. I still have San Antonio and Minnesota as least favorable just because those are two teams that have been at the three and four spots for most of this season in the Western Conference. And because they have key players out injured, in theory, they could become a little tougher than they appear now. And then I still have Utah and New Orleans in the middle. I'm just flipping the order. But we'll see. You have to keep an open mind, too. Part of the reason why I'm more optimistic on the Utah matchup is, as I said, what happened when the Rockets and Jazz played on night two of a back-to-back a couple of weeks ago. But the next two games, the Rockets play the Clippers tomorrow night, and the Rockets play the Pelicans on Saturday. It'll be the first time the Rockets have played the Pelicans since the Boogie injury. So that means you'll have Anthony Davis in his role, Nikola Mirotic. So we'll have to see exactly how those matchups look on the floor the next two games. And who knows, if something happens that dramatically changes it, I don't expect that to, because the Rockets have played both of these teams plenty already. But you have to keep an open mind, and maybe you see something in those on Thursday against the Clippers or Saturday against the Pelicans that could change things. I'm not anticipating that, though, so in terms of first-round matchups, that's where I'm at. Still Clippers and Denver, those to me appear to be the most favorable, followed by Utah and the Pelicans, and then I would say San Antonio and Minnesota are kind of at the rear. I'm not even including Portland or Oklahoma City in that mix anymore, because I just think there's too much talent, not enough injuries. I know you can say, well, you're including the Spurs and Wolves, why not include the Thunder? Well, it's because the Spurs and Wolves have some extenuating circumstances with injuries in which you can maybe see a path to which they're still in that 8-seed mix, even in the final week of the season. Whereas the Thunder, being mostly healthy, I expect them to pull away. So I'm not getting even into Portland, Oklahoma City there. To me, those are round two scenarios for the Rockets. That's why I discussed them earlier. And then of the six, that's my breakdown of where things stand as we chat in mid-March, now just 1 month away from the start of the postseason. So with that, I will wrap up today's show because, well, that's about enough we can talk about non-Rockets. We want to be a Rockets podcast, but this is a rare back-to-back day stretch in which the Rockets do not play games. The good news is that, well, I think it's the last such stretch for a while, because starting tomorrow, we're back to basketball, and it's going to be a very active stretch for the Rockets coming up Thursday against the Clippers, and then Saturday begins a 3-game-in-4-night stretch at New Orleans, at Minnesota on Sunday, and then at Portland on Tuesday. So the days ahead, we'll get back to the nitty-gritty of game-by-game micro-analysis. But with this being a rare consecutive off-day stretch, thought it was a good time to take a step back, do some macro-level analysis of where the Rockets are for all of the Western Conference playoffs, round one, round two, and, of course, the Western Conference Finals, what we hope is the inevitable showdown between the Rockets and Warriors, and give you guys a rundown what my opinion of the lay of the land is as of mid-March, and what to watch for as we come down the home stretch of the season. So until tomorrow, when the Rockets are back in action, I will sign off. As always, if you want more regular coverage from me or the show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. You can also email us, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook us, that's facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Or go to lockedonrockets.com and leave us a comment. Those are all ways that you can interact with us, ask questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, inquire about becoming a potential advertiser. We've got great rates, and our audience numbers are booming these days thanks to how hot the Rockets are on the floor, having won 19 of their past 20 games in the class of the NBA at 53-14 overall. So anything we can do to make this show better for you as a fan, as a businessman, whatever we can do, we want to be your source here at Locked On Rockets for daily discussion of your Houston Rockets. So until tomorrow, that's Thursday night, I will sign off. Again, Rockets Clippers, Thursday night from Toyota Center. That's when you'll be hearing from me next. And until then, folks, enjoy your hump day. Enjoy the start of March Madness. And stay tuned, because very soon we'll be right back to talking game-by-game basketball here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.